I'm Dan Malin, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest indie publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk about the Utah Blitz Ladies Football Squad, as well as bringing in resident jazz loudmouth Mike Brown to talk all about the Jazz recent draft. For those of you who have not heard, the Utah Blitz are Utah's first all-women's tackle football team. Yes, it's not all about those stupid lingerie football games on television. This is actual, real football with ladies kicking the crap out of each other and playing some ball. The team was established in 2009. They play their games at Judge Memorial High School, and they've played there ever since the first season. The team joined the Women's Football Alliance and joined the Pac Region Northwest Division, making it the largest division in the entire Women's Football Alliance. Slug writer Ben Tilden sat down with the team's owner, Jennifer Heskett, and rookie Vicky Smith-Pizzo, and talked about the Utah Blitz.
Utah Blitz. I got their start in 2009, but when did full contact women's football move past those powder puff days in the past?
Women's gridiron has been around since the 1990s, so it's been around a couple decades now.
And that was full contact?
That was full contact. They started it, the women's gridiron is back east, and they started it, and it's just grown from there.
Did it stem with that? Was there any attachment in that, or was it like...
No, I guess the WFA, which is the league that we're in, is created...
They were created in 2009, and that's when the Blitz actually started. They were looking for a league that was fitted for us, and they found out that the WFA is the one that worked for our football team. So
now I heard this is the fastest growing sport in America. Is that true? Have you guys heard that? Because I mean,
yeah. Well, just in the WFA, there are 62 teams across the United States that play women's full contact football.
Oh, wow.
In just the WFA.
Now, is that broken up like there are different like divisions within that, or like skill levels, or
yeah, different much? Divisions. We are in the Northwest Division. And so we do a lot of travel. We travel to Portland, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona,
Las Vegas.
Now, I found out about sport about 2 to 3 years ago. My initial response to this was, I was like, because, you know, I had played football in high school and I played rugby in the Navy. I was like, well, can they really hit? You know, is the excitement on the same level? And then it was funny because then about a year ago, I was talking to one of my friends and it came up again because, you know, the Blitz, you guys get some attention in this town. Like, it comes up. And I was like, well, how are the games? He's like, it's intense. He's like, I was like, do they hit as hard? He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, just as hard. He's like, the plays are as exciting. What is it really like out on the field? And I guess, like, for you guys with the intensity, and how is it for the fans?
I'd say for the intensity on the field, I mean, your adrenaline's going, and you know you have a job on that field, and to make that block or to make that hit, and when you do make that hit, it's just the adrenaline is just going. You want to get to the next play. As far as the fans, I know Vicky.
Yeah, this is my first year actually playing, and it's very intense. I was on the injured reserve the last half of the season, so I was on the sidelines, and the fans really get into it. Just like, you know, the NFL, they're, you know, hollering, that's not a call, that's not right, no, you know, and they get into it, and they cheer the players on, and it's just amazing.
All right, now I guess this question is for Jen. Now, you played for 4 years before becoming the team owner. How did being a player, I guess, how does that help you with being an owner? Do you think you're a more complete owner having that background?
I think so, because, you know, as far as what the players want, what they kind of expect for an owner to be, as far as you want to be able to go to that owner and be able to communicate with them. I think it's helped that me being a player. I'm actually, this last season, I was a player and owner.
Oh, really?
We'll see the next season. We'll see if I'm going to do both, because doing both is really hard, especially when you're on that field and you want to make sure, okay, is everything running okay out in the stands as far as the home games? But yeah, this was a big experience for me being owner and a player this last season.
That was funny. That was actually my next question. I was like, do you actually get back out there and mix it up? And just because would it be hard to let go? Could you ever really just be the owner without wanting to, like...
You know, I say that, I'm like, next season I'm just going to be the owner, but then, you know, you still have that kind of you're like, I don't know if I can do that. I mean, I have the love of the game, so, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't know how it would be if I'm on the sideline and I can see them out there. It's like, I want to be there. I think, but we'll see. We'll see how this, preparation for the new season, 2015 season, we'll see how that goes and go from there. We'll see. Maybe I'll be on the field next season. We'll see.
This is one of my personal questions. Now, when I was a player years and years ago, there was a bit of a hazing that went on with the newbies. Now, is there still a lot of like lockers getting filled with shaving cream nowadays, or is there still
camaraderie? No. What? Considering I'm the newbie here, no. It's totally the opposite.
Oh, really?
They're like, do you need anything? This is what you need to do. Okay, now remember this. Are you good with your plays? They totally help you, you know, and it's not, you know, any hazing whatsoever.
With the players in the league, are you all strictly football players, or are some of your athletes half the time like moms and professionals? Like, do you guys like balance it, or is it just football?
I think it's pretty balanced. I mean, there's moms out there. I'm a mom. I work full-time, medical assistant, and then we have players that are students. Anywhere from, we have paramedics to construction workers. It's a whole diversity of.
It's a big diversity. I mean, this year, not only did we have moms on there, but we had moms and daughters playing together on the team. And we had grandmas on the team. And it was just, it's amazing, you know, the diverse people that are working there. Are playing there. We have softball players. We have ladies that have played rugby playing football now, you know. So they balance everything, and it's working right now.
Our youngest player, I believe, was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 16, and then our oldest player is?
51.
51.
So. Wow, it's a huge range.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Jen, do you think with being a mom, does that help you? Like, does that, you know, when it comes to putting the smack down, do you think that discipline and all that, you're like?
I don't know. I mean, I go on that field and I give my, you know, I give 110% out there. I mean, it's the only game that you can actually get out your aggression. And, you know, women ask me, like, why do you play? I'm like, hey, it's the only place I can go out there and practice and hit somebody and, you know, and it's like, you need to come and play. I don't know. I just love the game.
Yeah.
I don't know, Vicky.
It's amazing. And, you know, as far as, you know, smacking down the kids and everything like that, because I am the elder statesman of the team, they pretty much, if I say something, they'll respect me, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, having to discipline them or anything like that. It's just, they know.
All right. So within your divisions, I guess, for you guys, who's your biggest rival?
You know, right now we don't have a rival. They've actually changed the divisions this last season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we don't really have one right now.
No, we don't.
Did they take your rival?
I don't.
Who was it? I've never heard of a rival.
Yeah, we haven't really had one. I mean, because every year it kind of switches.
Okay.
I think it just depends on who's going to be playing that next year.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't have a rival.
Now, is it like that because of the growth, just the growth of the sport and whatnot? Mm-hmm. They're constantly having to adjust?
Yeah, they do. And two, we are a pay-to-play league, so mm-hmm. I mean, to get a team together and, you know, to make sure you have those funds to carry you through that season. Some teams, you know, they'll pay their registration fee, and then come time they find out that they don't have enough money to make it through the season, so sometimes they have to drop out, which is pretty sad because
it is for our female listeners that are thinking about playing women's football. I guess for both of you, and we'll start with Jen first, what inspired you to take this football journey or path?
You know, I've played football, you know, when I was little. I mean, we'd be playing with, you know, boys and all that on the field or whatever. And then even in high school, I got to play powder puff football, put on the pads and all that. And when I found out that, you know, there was a women's team here, and I was able to contact them, and they contacted me. And I mean, it was just, you know, a dream. I guess it was a dream that, you know, I've always wanted to do. And I can remember my first hit. The coach gave me the ball and said, you try to get to the other side of the field. And there's two players on me, and both of them hit me, and I hit that ground. And coach comes up to me and says, how do you feel? I'm like, good. Got back up. And I mean, it's just, if you always had a dream, or if you always wanted to do something, I say go for it. Try it out. That's my thing. I mean, women are like, no, I can't play football. It's gonna, you know, I'm gonna get hurt. I'm like, no, you need to get out there, you need to try it. It's something you might like. And here I am 4 years later, still going. So
that's awesome. And you, Vicky?
Well, I, you know, raising my son playing football since he was 8 years old, watching him, and I was like, I got to do that. And I actually started looking back in 2004 on, there's got to be a team around here. Well, there was, but it wasn't where I could play. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, like 100 miles away. And so I just gave up on it. It's like, then I thought, okay, I need to motivate my son to get back into football. I'm going to play football. I got online and I looked at all kinds of football teams and I picked the Blitz. You know, the Blitz is the team that I want to play for. Called up Jen and said, "Were you going to have a clinic?" And yep, this is where we're having our clinic. And I was been nonstop since then. So yep. It's been a little over a year now.
Nice. So. Has it added a proper amount of excitement to everything?
It has.
Did it ever overwhelm you at first? Was it ever like?
It was a little overwhelming. It's like, holy man, I am out of shape. I have got to work on this. So yeah, it was like, but it was a great experience. And you know, if anybody else that wants to play, just come out, you know, we'll put you on the team.
To find out more about the team and check out their schedule and whatnot, visit them online at utblitz.com.
Hi, it's Bill Allred, and while you've been playing with yourself, I've been interviewing people for the Let's Go Eat show. Here's an example of what I'm talking about.
Artie Fufkin, when did you start?
Actually, I was your second intern back in 1992. I was there from the freaking beginning, and you always scared me. You made me cry every freaking morning. Made me cry.
I did not.
I cried on the way home. I cried on the way there. Every day, I was crying.
Why?
You made me cry. I couldn't please you.
Download the Let's Go Eat show now. It's available on iTunes and the letsgoeatshow.com.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week beginning July 22nd and running through July 28th. I suggest you go to slugmag.com. I do it every episode. Go to the homepage, scroll down to the bottom, check out all those listings. There's always great new shows being added, all kinds of events up and down the Wasatch Front. I found all kinds of goodies this week, starting right there on Tuesday, July 22nd. The Tedeschi Trucks Band are headlining at Red Butte. If you don't know those guys, they are a little bit jammy, but Susan Tedeschi is one mean blues way in her own right, and Derek Trucks, her husband, who's the lead guitarist of the band, truly one of the best living guitarists we have around. The guy toured with Clapton. The guy has played in the Allman Brothers for years. This is his project with his wife, and he shreds. He is a joy to watch every time they play. Opening the show, Rich Robinson, the guitar-playing brother from the Black Crowes, making it a fine double bill. On Wednesday, July 23rd, one of my favorite old punk bands coming back through town, 7 Seconds, headlining a show at Club Sound. They have a new collection out there, and I guarantee they'll play some of those great old ones from when they used to play at the Speedway Cafe. That's where I first saw them. Really great band. Kevin Seconds is a fine songwriter as well. The People Under the Stairs will bring a awesome show to the Urban Lounge that same night. You have to choose between your punk rock and your hip-hop that night. Flip a coin, go to Urban, go to Club Sound. Both really fine shows. Thursday, July 24th, of course, Pie and Beer Day here in Utah. Also, the night of a fine Twilight Concert Series show featuring Charles Bradley as well as the Budos Band. If you really like old school soul, Charles Bradley's got it, puts on a great show. He'll be a fine thing out at the Pioneer Park. On Friday, July 25th, the Polyphonic Spree returns at In the Venue. If you've never seen them, they have like 20, 30 people in the band. They wear choir robes, but they're kind of rocking. Really good time. I remember first seeing them at South by Southwest, and it was unlike anything else you'd seen. They've had a few hit songs over the years. They still put on a really great live show. Sunday, July 27th, young blues cat out of Austin, Texas, Gary Clark Jr. He's another guy who puts on a great live show, playing at the Red Butte Garden that night. Same night over at Urban Lounge, Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons. Always a good time, always a really solid show. Of course, the Jack Mormons includes our own JR from here in Salt Lake City. Same night over at Kilby, talk about a big Sunday night. Miniature Tigers, little indie rock on the lighter side. That's at Kilby Court that night. And it's also Geek Show movie night over at Broovies. So basically, a shit ton of options on Sunday, July 27th. And then on Monday, July 28th, Black Flag at the Complex. Now, I am suggesting this show, but I will also warn you, there are a couple competing versions of Black Flag in the world right now. This Black Flag does have Greg Ginn, the founder, the originator, the man who owned SST Records, the guitarist. Should be a pretty good show. I kind of prefer Flag, which has Keith Morris, formerly of Circle Jerks, now of Off, and a bunch of other former Black Flag members. But whatever, you take what you can get. You'll hear a bunch of the old favorites as well as some new ones. Black Flag at the Complex on Monday, July 28th. That is your weekly daily calendar for the week of July 22nd. As always, go on there and check out the listings. There's new stuff going in there every day. And you can add your own listings to the batch. That's for free, and for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some links to your listings. Hey, we have brought in our resident Utah Jazz expert, yapper, loudmouth, whatever you want to call him.
Analyst,
that's right. Mike Brown, right here live in the studio. Well, live to the internet anyway. Mike, welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, so we're here in the midsummer right now, and the last time we talked was when the Jazz were sort of entering this mysterious summertime, and they hadn't fired the coach yet, and they did that, and they hadn't hired a new coach, and they've done that, and they've had a draft, so we'll delve into all that here. Why don't we start, first of all, with the fact that the Jazz got a couple of hot shit draft picks, you know, opinion.
They lucked the fuck out.
That's right. So let's start with Mr. Dante Exum, the Australian kid, 19.
Well, did he turn 19? He turns 19 this month.
Oh, okay. About to
he's
be
still,
19.
Yeah, he's still a kid. 18, yeah. He can't buy cigarettes.
Hasn't really been that familiar to U.S. people, but the night of the draft, all of a sudden he was pimping Adidas all over the television like every other commercial break.
And those ads were pretty good, by the way.
They were good. They're really funny.
Yeah, no one knows about him. They are all like, oh, he's an international man of mystery, but he was kind of a dude I was hoping for, because I was like looking at all the draft rumors and all the, you know, fucking look him up on YouTube and shit like that. But there's all these rumors about us trading up for like Jabari Parker or Wiggins, and yeah, every time I would hear that, I was like, no fucking way. No,
nobody's trading with us to move down two spots.
And I was always like, if best case scenario for this draft is that we trade some pieces to get Exum, and then luckily Philadelphia made another boner move and drafted another injured big man, which experts are saying, oh, well, Embiid's injury, you know, he'll be out next year, but he could be the next Elijah one. I'm like, fuck, dude, really?
We won't know for a couple years.
We won't know for a couple years, and, like, honestly, just given that position, what he did with it, it's like saying you drafted the next Jordan. You just don't fucking do that.
Well, and I think, so the Orlando Magic picked right before the Jazz, and I was worried that the Jazz were going to draft that Aaron Gordon kid.
I didn't like him.
He's came out of Arizona, and I watched in person as the Utes right here in Salt Lake kind of kicked that guy's ass for a couple games this year. Super young dude, supposedly has all this potential and all that jazz, but that's what we got. But we got a guy who has potential to be superstar.
Yeah, but we're already trying to develop that position too.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of big men.
It was the best case scenario for the Jazz to get who they got. Even Rodney Hood was a steal at what they got.
Second
him
round, or late first round, yep.
Late
a dude
first
who
round
can pump threes.
But they didn't have to spend any money, so they could save their money for
that's
Steve
right
Novak.
Yeah. That's another guy who can pump threes, but he can't do anything else.
No.
But yeah, so we got Exum, who, for people who don't know out there, like, people have seen him play against some American high school kids in some tournaments, and he's played in, like, world games type of tournaments against guys from all over the world who are his age. And he tore it up, allegedly. If you try to YouTube him, there's not a whole lot of awesome video out there. But he's 6'6", and he's supposedly really fast. He can handle the ball. And
he can play point guard. He wants to be a point guard.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if that's going to work out for him or not.
I think it will. I like what they were saying about spreading the floor.
They
can
play with both of them.
Yeah, they can play with both
two
of
guards.
Them. I mean, you can't go wrong with two guards. And you look at like a lot of NBA teams having a lot of success with that right now. Like Phoenix did it with Dragic and
Bledsoe.
Okay, yeah. Bledsoe.
Eric
or
Bledsoe.
Then you look at what Golden State did with their backcourt, Steph Curry and
Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, it's like two point guards, especially if they're fucking both good.
That's right.
That's a good thing.
So how weird will it be to kind of hear these interviews after the game and the kid's going to have like a Crocodile Dundee accent busted
hello
out? Put another shrimp on the Barbie kind of
that's
thing.
That's a knife. Yeah. Well, I like that he already made it very clear. He's like, don't call me Crocodile Dextum or what, what were people calling him?
Oh, yeah. Bad nicknames.
They were bad nicknames. I like that he established that right off the bat. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to prison and you got to beat up the biggest dude you see first.
Yeah.
He got here and was like, don't give me any shitty nicknames. We don't
that's
fucking
good
put shrimps
I'm
on.
I'm hopeful that Andrew Bogut, who played at the U, who's Australian also, tell him that Salt Lake ain't so bad.
Yeah, well, yeah, Bogut knows. Bogut would know for sure. And, like, from everything I understood, he liked it here.
Totally.
I mean, we got him drafted number one.
That's right. Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
And then Rodney Hood, left-handed guy, kind of a, 2-3, can shoot like crazy, maybe play a little bit of defense. I think one of the advantages for him will be he plays or he played at Duke, where our new coach, Quinn Snyder, was a longtime player and assistant.
Not only that, think about this, people. He was the team captain at Duke. It wasn't
Jabari.
It wasn't Jabari. It wasn't the Stormin' Mormon.
That's right.
Everybody was in love
with. And he was named captain at Duke when he hadn't even played for him yet. He was transferring from Mississippi State. So they love that guy.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's like something that would like impact the Jazz right away, but that's something to fucking think about, dude. When like especially in college, when your best player isn't named the captain.
Yep.
You know? I mean, it's pretty good.
That's right. That's going to be a pretty good choice. Even if he's a guy who, like, plays 3 or 4 years and he's decent and moves on or something and we get some good years out of him.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's what we get out of a lot of guys over the years, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty much all the Jazz get out of guys.
So, let's talk about the new coach. Now, what did you think when they... there were a lot of rumors around and there were lots of coaches out there cycling through because there were a lot of open jobs. So the Jazz were competing with a lot of teams. A lot of them more glamorous than Utah, like the Knicks or the Lakers. Lakers still don't have a coach as we record this.
Yeah.
So what do you think of when they get out Quinn Snyder?
I like it. First off, he has really nice hair. He has
really
nicest hair. Yeah,
a little too
all the coaches that
taste,
were on the market.
Right.
Second of all, you know, you look at his coaching pedigree. I think it's fucking weird what New York did because, you know, they did what New Jersey did where you hired an awesome point guard right out, no coaching experience, out. And who knows? Maybe Derek Fisher would be awesome, but Jason Kidd sure shit wasn't an awesome coach.
Now he's in Milwaukee already.
Yeah.
Look. 1 year and gone.
He's never going to coach again after that contract runs out.
That's right.
All other coaches are so mad at him. Basically, he tried a coup.
Yeah, totally. Tried to take over the whole team operations.
In case you didn't hear it. Because he was mad that Derek Fisher was making more money than him just across the river. Yeah.
And Golden State.
I've never liked Steve Kerr. We saw him be a general manager and he wasn't that good.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the guy that brought Shaq to Phoenix when Shaq was just
done.
Like, okay. And so, you know, I don't think I like that we hired a dude.
He's a coach.
It's a coach.
An actual
coach.
That's
an actual coach. He's not a player. He was a point guard in college and that's it.
Yep.
And then he coached college and he had success. He's had success everywhere he's coached.
And he's coached with like the Spurs and he's been an assistant with the guy who went from the Spurs to the Hawks.
Yeah.
He coached in Russia with their big name.
That
like, Russian dude.
Oh, I forgot his name.
Yeah.
But yeah, just that Russian dude.
The Russian dude who's going to get a job in the States someday.
But yeah, I mean, he's actually coached, and he's smart as shit. He's got like 2 master's degrees, you know.
And he got in trouble in college for like some recruiting shit, but you don't have to worry about that in the pros. So
yeah,
it's perfect.
And that's not even his fault. Like every fucking college does that shady shit. He just was unfortunate.
So it'll be interesting. I like that they got it, and he's pretty young for people who don't know. Or the new coach is kind of, you know, he's lower than 50 anyway.
Yeah,
he looks younger than that.
He kind of looks like Christian Bale from American Psycho.
Yep. Especially when he has those suits on, no doubt.
Yeah.
So it'll be good to have kind of this young dude with a bunch of young players, I think. And they didn't give him a super long contract either. I think he got like a 3-year deal or something. So
That's
a good trial.
Yeah, it's a good trial. And plus, you know, coaches these days, they'll just fire him and eat the money regardless.
Exactly.
They don't give a shit.
That's right.
So
the Jazz don't do that. We keep guys around till the contract's up.
Yeah,
then we don't rehire
them. So dumb.
So it'll be interesting. So the last big issue that's hanging out there, and it was out there a little bit when we talked last time, and as we record this, this might resolve itself by the time this goes on. So why don't we just predict? So we're talking about Gordon Hayward, the Jazz's free agent. There are rumors that some teams are going to give him a max deal. That isn't going to happen in my book in a million years. But so the question is going to be, are the Jazz willing to pay $10 million a year or $12 million a year?
Okay,
even up to 15, which is not going to happen.
It's weird what's being said and then what's going to happen. I think are kind of different things. Because first off, that whole max contract thing
with Cleveland,
you know,
bullshit.
That was bullshit. But you know, that was his agent saying like, "Hey, got a story for you." And
no.
I think it was someone at Yahoo Sports breaks the story.
Yeah, he would have signed
for
that
you,
offer if that
Cleveland's
was a real
talking to him about max contract, and then it becomes whoa. Like, are we really supposed to believe that if our front office was even stupid enough to like buy on something like that? Like, okay.
And now a week later, Cleveland is talking about LeBron James, not Gordon Hayward.
And what they're talking about is essentially, there's 2 fears. First fear is the max contract thing, which is kind of what happened with Andre Kirilenko, where we gave him max contract and he didn't live up to be the max player.
Yeah.
So there's that fear, which is not going to happen. And then, because Andre would have gotten signed by someone for a max deal at the time.
He was a young dude who was shredding.
Yeah, it was crazy.
We didn't know he was going to have a bad back for 10 years after
that. Yeah, exactly. And plus, us, you know, right after we gave him that contract, we got Boozer O'Croar, changed the whole team.
Yep.
So anyway, there's that. And then there's a part of where, like, a team will offer him, like, a toxic contract just to fuck with this, like, what, a la Portland and Paul Millsap and, and Wes Matthews, where we decided to let Wes Matthews walk and get paid way fucking more than what he's worth. He's a great player, but he's making way... Or... we did what we did with where we like Paul Millsap enough that we're like, all right, we're going to match this $20 million contract even though you're not worth it. And you don't say you're not worth it, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
And so either way, it's win-win for the players.
That's how teams steal guys from each other.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to try to take Hayward from us.
It's kind of like you'd think smaller markets, though, would have more solidarity and not fuck with each other so much, but I guess not. So
apparently not.
So there's that worry with Hayward, and it's kind of like, at what number are they going to just be like,
fuck it.
Oh, fuck it. Yeah, we can't.
Fuck it.
I could see him getting as much as 15 is my prediction, but I think that's too high for him.
Yeah.
I think
I'm putting it at 12 myself.
12 max.
I don't think other teams are even going to offer him 15. They might give him one of those.
I think someone would do 15 to fuck with us.
I could see that.
But nah, what
since
he's worth.
Since we said we're going to sign him no matter what. 10 to 12. 10 to 12. I could see that. That's nothing in today's NBA.
It's really not. And get him, you know, 3-4 years, something like that. I think that'd be great. And then just, you know, keep Hayward happy. I mean,
that's right. Why not?
Yeah.
And I hate the idea of having a guy be here for 4 years and sort of growing. And then we're just like, eh, we're giving up on him now. Because the guy's 22 or something, 23.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be a superstar, but he's a good player, and he's going to get better, I think.
He's still got some room. Plus, like, they gave him just such a shit storm to deal with. He was kind of in the same boat Ty was, where Ty was a crappy coach anyway. But it's like, all right, Gordon Hayward, you were the captain. And
here's a bunch of shitty players and a coach who's on a, we know he's going to be gone at the end of the year.
Yeah,
hopefully it'll work. Hey, Mike Brown, tell us where we find you out there in the interwebs.
On the interweb, I'm on Facebook by invite only, though.
Exclusive.
I got to keep my Mormon family away from my social media as much as possible.
That's right.
You can follow me on Twitter at @FuckMikeBrown. My Instagram is pretty solid. That's I'm at @Fagatron with one G.
Word. And of course the column every month in Slug Magazine.
The Slug column. Read the Slug column. You can read that on the internet too.
That's right.
And I just started a Pinterest because Slug made everyone start a Pinterest. And I'm still trying to figure out how it works. But
I remember that.
I pinned some things today. So if you want to pin me, I'm Fagatron801.
Go pin the Fagatron. Well, thank you for coming in. We will pick this up, and no doubt the Hayward thing will have worked itself out when we talk in a month or two, and we're getting ready for the season to start. And Summer League will be over, and we'll have gotten a look at this Australian kid. Exciting.
I'm excited.
Thank you for listening to Slug Soundwaves, and for all things Slug Magazine, once again, go visit slugmag.com. We got Craft Lake City coming up, of course, a giant event in the cultural year in Salt Lake City. It's happening in about a month, and we'd like to hear what you're most excited to see, whether it's the art, some music, the science and tech building, anything you've dug in the past. Send us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com, or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves, or on facebook.com/slugsoundwaves. We just might bring up your favorite tip on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Genevieve Smith, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is one Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasage. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd, and the technical design by Kate Colgan. Next week, be sure to fire us up again. We got all kinds of great food discussion. We're going to be talking about the food truck scene, as well as bringing in Mary Brown Malou from Salt Lake Magazine, resident food expert. Thanks for listening.